This is Childhood Matters, presented by Interactive Parenting Media.
Childhood Matters.
For parents and everyone else who cares for or about kids.
We are family. Get up, everybody, and sing.
Here's your host, Rona Renner.
Good morning and welcome to Childhood Matters special series, Your Teen Matters. This is six in our six-part Your Teen Matters series, a program for parents and all those who care about and support teenagers. I'm Beth Samuelson, founder and director of Student Organizational Services, an academic coaching and advocacy service for middle school and high school students. And I'm actually your host today because my co-host, Nurse Rona, is on vacation visiting her family in Florida. And Rona, if you're somewhere listening on the internet, good morning, and we miss you. But I wanted to talk a little bit about a series. Over the past 6 months, we've done shows focusing on everything from homework challenges to managing digital overload in your home with your teen. Today's program addresses an issue of concern to all parents, how to best talk to your teen about what matters most. We're going to focus on how to avoid guilt, blame, and miscommunication, and we'd really love to hear your personal stories and take your questions. What pushes your buttons with your teens? Typical sources of conflict in your house between you and your teens? Let us know. The phone lines are open, and you can call us at 877-372-KIDS. That's 877-372-5437. You can also email us at info@childhoodmatters.org. And I'm very fortunate this morning to have in the studio Michael Simon. Michael is an East Bay-based psychotherapist specializing in working with teens and their parents and the founder of Practical Help for Parents. PHP offers support to parents of teens, educators, administrators, and mental health professionals that serve youth daily. Excuse me. He's been speaking and conducting workshops at schools and clinics around the Bay Area since 1995. But in 2004, based on growth, Michael developed online support for families. Michael's been in private practice for close to 15 years, and he's currently writing a book on teens and status, which sounds really interesting. Welcome, Michael.
Thanks. Good morning.
I would love to hear from you what your, in your practice, what are typical, what's one of the biggest issues that you hear about from parents in terms of communicating with their teen, one of their biggest concerns?
I think one of the things I hear most often has to do with parents who aren't yet sure whether or not they have an adolescent in the household. Mm-hmm. So they might come into the office and they come in alone and they're feeling like, you know, my child who I used to really, really love and think was cute and smart and sweet is really difficult now and might be really obnoxious. And parents often are feeling not respected and not heard, and they're feeling more like a wallet and a paycheck than a real parent. So they come in often trying to figure out, is this normal or is something really going on with my teen that's wrong?
Yeah, what I find is, too, that the parents tend to have a common, the common thread is that they find the teen really reactive to things that they don't think are very important or big deals, and they don't often see their own role in creating the reactivity.
Yes, absolutely. And I make sure not to point that out during the first session.
That's probably a good idea.
To give the parents a chance to actually be heard for what they're going through first.
Yes. The issue really for a lot of kids is that they often find that their parents are grilling them and they get defensive. And I mean, I think that's an ongoing theme that I see, is this kind of back and forth between being accusatory and being defensive, and then how to navigate that so that it's less of attack and defend and more collaborative.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that I often find really helps parents with limiting the amount of grilling they're doing is just for them to slow down a little bit and realize that they're parenting, which is one of the hardest jobs you can possibly do in the world. And the second thing is that, you know, they don't have to have all the right answers. And often that grilling position comes from the idea that, oh, I really better get this right the first time, and I'm worried about my child's safety, or I'm worried that they're going to end up living in a van down by the river.
Yeah,
and if we don't settle this right away, I'm going to lose my teenager. And once they realize that that isn't true and they actually have time to figure out how to be a better parent, they calm down too, and they stop grilling.
Yeah, so a lot of the grilling comes from anxiety.
You know,
we've actually got a call this morning from Carol in Orinda.
Hi, how are you?
Good morning, Carol. How are you?
I'm okay.
I'm glad you called. I'd love to hear your thoughts and sort of your situation. Share it with us.
Well, in the area of communicating, it was it's like my 15-year-old son, who has ADHD and is the dearest kid in the world, also seems to be the angriest kid in the world. And at the same time, he's wanting to, you know, cut the apron strings and spend more time with his friends. And I had an incident the other day that was pretty typical. It has elements of the ADHD and then elements of just the teenager who is sullen and angry and all that. But, you know, we have some boundaries. I've made them really clear. You know, I'm going to come pick you up from school. And if you're going to be anywhere other than where you're supposed to be, you need to call me. So I don't get scared and think you're going to live in a van down by the river. So the other day I'm picking him up from school, and I get a telephone call as I'm almost there. And he said, I'm downtown with my buddies, and we're going to go up to so-and-so's house, and then I'm going to spend the night. And it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. No, you can't do that. And, well, why? You know, and then it just, it sort of spirals. And I said, well, you know, you changed the plan, and you have some things that you need to do tonight before you go to the dance. And so, and then it just, he takes offense. You know, I shouldn't be the way I'm being. And it's just this heightened sensitivity to any time I say no or any time I need to get a little more firm, it's, you're yelling at me. Why are you yelling at me? And so I don't have any room, it feels like, to redirect him. If he has his plans, he wants to execute them without any kind of feedback from me.
Well, I think it's a really interesting point about that it's, there's no room for you to say no because he's so reactive to the no, and that just sets him off because he feels undermined, I'm guessing, by the no. Michael, what do you think? What can you say to Carol and about how to deal with her son with this issue?
Well, first of all, I want to commend you because you actually sound pretty calm.
Yeah.
As you're relating
you
this.
You really do.
And my guess is, I could be wrong because I'm not there, but my guess is that actually you're probably even doing a better job than you think in the moment. One of the things I often hear with parents is that they feel very guilty or they feel very worried or anxious about saying no. And they worry that the relationship is going to be harmed or that the conflict in the moment is going to overshadow everything. And it really just isn't true. I mean, one of the things, especially with a 15-year-old, is that we can't really expect that when we say, when we set a limit or we say no, that they're going to be happy about it. So if you're going for happy, like you tell your son, well, this is not the plan and you're changing it up on me, and so I need some time to catch up. You can't expect that your son is going to say to you, you know, Mom, thanks so much, because I knew I was being a little impulsive and mm-hmm. I just needed your calming presence to get me to see the light. So he's probably not going to say that until he's about 29, and then we'll keep our fingers crossed for that. So one thing that goes with ADHD is a quickness to anger and a quickness to irritability and also impulsivity. So right. Things like changing the plans at the last moment is pretty much par for the course. And my hope is, I know it doesn't make it easier in the moment, but to try and remember not to take that personally, it's pretty much going to come up all the time. The other thing is you're setting limits with your child, which is a really good thing to do. If you're not expecting him to be real happy about it, but you're just firm and kind, I think eventually you'll see that he might come around, but he won't be happy in the moment.
Yeah, I was just, how does that sound, Carol, to you? What in terms of the reactivity and the impulsivity, does that sound like him?
Oh,
in a moment.
Absolutely. Yeah. I do have to say, though, that I think within 2 or 3 minutes, I wasn't so calm.
Okay.
That's okay. You know what I was thinking as I was listening to you is instead of if there are certain triggers for this kind of interaction or you see certain kinds of situations, I'm wondering if you can talk about this preemptively and proactively rather than in the heat of the moment when there's not a problem to sit down with your son and say to him, you know, I'm noticing a pattern in how we get into it. And I'm wondering if we can talk about some different ways to do this. So because there are times that I'm going to have to say no to you because you can't do certain things and it's going to upset you. And I want us to be able to live with that and move through that. And I think I found that when parents can and kids can sit down and talk about things when it's not hot and have a calm discussion where they actually listen to each other about, you know, what's going on. It's just very hard to do. It's very hard to actively listen in the moment when you're upset. I think that's the truth. What have you tried? What works to calm him down? What have you tried?
I've tried saying, you know, this is just not going well right now. Why don't you and I go our separate ways for a few minutes here and take a break?
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about it in a minute.
And how does he respond to that?
Well, he usually gets really upset, and then I usually raise my voice a little bit and say, no, I really need a break right now.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't working for me. You may want to be carrying on the conversation for a few minutes longer, but I'm beginning to feel pretty upset. So you go downstairs, and I'll go upstairs, and I'll get back to you in about 5 minutes.
See, I think that stepping out is really good. He may not have liked it, but I think you did the right thing. And even, again, in advance of a situation like this in the future, just being able to say, you know, look, when things get heavy, I am going to need to step out because it's too hard to keep this going. Michael, do you have any final words for Carol or thoughts on how to handle this in the future?
Well, it's not actually an answer, Carol, but I think I just want to support with you the idea that when you're parenting a teenager who does have ADHD, it's different than parenting a teenager who doesn't have ADHD. And trying to take your time or take a break or have timeouts is a great idea. But in my experience, oftentimes it doesn't work. And kids end up feeling either ashamed or blamed anyway, regardless of what you're trying to do. And I think just recognizing that that goes with the struggle of having ADHD, kids feel blameworthy all the time because they know that they're a bit out of step than their peers. So trying to bring yourself to your child's perspective and know it's pretty hard to be a student with ADHD. And also you have my empathy as well because it's hard parenting a student with ADHD. It won't be smooth.
Yeah, and I just said the last thing I was going to say was I think also just validating his point of view, even though it's antithetical to yours, you know, just I understand you really wanted to do this. This sounded really fun, and I'm putting the kibosh on it, and that's really hard to hear.
When we try and implement something around safety, kids always feel that we're hassling them.
Yeah, and they don't always make the best decisions, so we have to be their frontal lobes for them and come in and make those choices that are hard for them to hear. Carol, thank you so much for calling. In light of the fact that you shared the story, I'd like to send you a copy of a great book by Mike Riera called Staying Connected to Your Teen.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I think that'll be of great help to you. Thanks. Have a great morning.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We have another call on the line, and this is Renee from Lafayette. Good morning, Renee.
Good morning.
And tell us what you'd like us to know about your family situation, about communication.
I have a 15, almost 16-year-old daughter that sometimes I ask her questions. I'll actually suspect that something is going on or she's involved in something, often around, you know, drama with her friends. and I'll ask her questions and know that she's lying to me. And I don't know how to respond to those situations.
So it's the situation is just that you really for sure know that she's not telling you the truth. And do you call her on it? And do you actually say, you know, look, I don't believe you? Or is there another way around that situation where you're putting her on the defensive? Michael?
Yeah, that's a tough situation because if you immediately put on your attorney hat and start to question her and cross-examine her, just taking a wild guess here, she might get more angry or she might want to shut down and turn away. So it's really tough. One of the questions I would have for you is when you have a sense of certainty that she's lying to you, what's your worry underneath it or what's your anxiety? Are you worried that the thing that she's lying about is something that might be getting her into trouble?
Yes, she'd be getting into trouble. And the other worry I have is that she doesn't take responsibility for her actions.
So how do you, for a 15, 16-year-old daughter, how do you think that would look to you for her to take responsibility for her actions? What would she be doing?
The reality or in my
no,
my when
you're
world?
In your deepest wishes, what would she look like?
She'd say, you know, I did get involved in that. It was a really stupid thing to do. And, you know, I learned from the mistakes.
Okay, which sounds wonderful. And I think that's a great goal. And trying to sort out what's realistic and normal and expectable from what you'd like is one of the first things to try and do. So at 15 or 16, really taking responsibility, owning her own mistakes, being forthcoming with information, trusting you is something that as she heads towards 19, 20, and 21 would be expectable. But at 15 and 16, when she's really trying to carve out her own privacy and a sense of her own identity, it's not likely that she would be forthcoming with you. So the first thing I think is just to try not to take that too personally. This is happening in just about every household with an adolescent across the world.
That's for sure. Yeah.
So that's the first thing. But if you're, do you have something more specific that you're worried about that she's getting into that you could tell us?
Well, I think that, I have an older daughter, and there were situations there where I would hear from a neighbor that, you know, when she was driving unsafely. And in that situation, I could just say, look, I heard this, and, you know, regardless of how you feel about it, it's important to me that. And that was okay. But in situations where I'm hearing that maybe she's involved in some drama at school or some situation that really could lead her down a path that would not be safe for her. And I say, I want to talk to you about this situation I've heard about instead of, and she'll just say, I'm not involved, or it's my friend who's not the instigator, but the only one that's involved.
Yes.
I'm just trying to talk her out of it.
Renee, I'd like to carry this on. I'm going to keep you on the phone, if I may, because I think you're bringing up some important issues, and we're going to go to a break. It would be, I think, just to kind of respond to that, when there are safety issues involved, I think it is really important that you do step in. But I do think there's the privacy problem is and your daughter's need for independence and autonomy and feeling like she can handle things on her own has to be taken into consideration. And you really got to be careful. It's sort of back to that call. Avoid putting your daughter on the defensive, but speak to her in a way of, you know, in empathizing and concern. And be careful that you're not giving a lot of you messages. All right? We're going to come right back. I really want to talk to you a little more. Please call 877-372-KIDS, 877-372-5437. We want to hear from you this morning.
Join the dialogue.
Share your thoughts.
Add your feedback.
All Childhood Matters now at 1-877-372-KIDS.
Brought to you in part by First Five, Santa Clara County.
the famous Rona Renner today, who's on vacation. And we're talking about teenagers and communicating with teens this morning. My guest in the studio is Michael Simon, who is an East Bay-based psychotherapist specializing in working with teens and their parents and the founder of Practical Help for Parents. We have on the line Renee. We've been talking to Renee about her situation with her daughter, trying to communicate with her about an issue of safety that involves another kid. And we're there's concern about how to talk about this issue in the house. Michael, do you have any other thoughts for how a family like Renee's family can address issues of safety and concern without putting the kid on the hot seat?
Right. Well, first, there's no perfect template here, and we realize, Renee, that you're winging it, because part of the time there might be a situation, as I think Beth was saying, where you want to give your daughter some privacy, you want to let her have her own experience without getting too involved in it. But other times when you get really worried that something's happening that might be dangerous to her, that's a call where you have to step in. But there are ways of doing that where you can lessen the chance that she's going to feel really defensive. One thing you can do is to try and think about talking to her on her time schedule rather than yours. So you might want to meet her at the door when she comes in, or you might want to talk to her immediately as she jumps into the car when you pick her up. And that's often one of the worst times to talk with our teens. They've realized something really important, a secret about adults, which is that tired adults talk less and listen more. And that's one reason why they want to talk to us really late at night or really early in the morning. Mm-hmm. So if there's a safety issue going on and you can be up a little bit later, or you can respond to her when she comes to in the morning, that might be a time where she feels like you're going to be less reactive or jump in less, and she might tell you a little bit more. The other thing is to try and remember, if you have concerns or worries, to try, I know I'm sounding like a therapist here, sorry, but to try
you
and...
You are a therapist, Michael.
Oh, yes, that's
yes,
right.
Yes, that's right.
So to try and own your worries. So when you're saying to her, you'd actually say to her, I'm really concerned about this. Or you can even use the entry point that teens love, which is, I might be crazy here, but I'm feeling really worried. And they love when we say that because we might be wrong.
Yeah, I love what you said there. You know, Renee, I think that's another great point to kind of wrap this up on, is using a lot of I messages and actually going maybe even out of the house with your daughter and doing something together, taking a walk and expressing concerns as empathy rather than to put her on the defensive, you know, with you messages. And so I really appreciate your call. I think you bring up really important issues that a lot of families are going to relate to. And I'm also going to send you Staying Connected to Your Teen, and hopefully it'll help the both of you. Thanks for calling, Renee.
Thank you.
You know, one of the things, we've got another call that I want to take, but I want to talk about asking questions of teens that end up coming across as accusations. I know what you think about this, Michael. I think one of the typical things I see with parents is asking, you know, where parents ask why questions. Why didn't you get your homework done? Why haven't you started? Why didn't you call me? That there's really no response that's appropriate to the why question, because it's really a complaint.
Yes, absolutely. Why isn't your prefrontal cortex fully developed?
Yes.
Which is the question we really want to ask our teens.
Why can't you take responsibility? Why can't you focus? You know, why? Yes.
Right. And there's no good answer for that. So kids feel overwhelmed and they feel defensive and they're going to say something to shut you down.
Yes.
So you're really bringing up the important point of kids often feel, in my experience, adolescents feel really disrespected all the time. So they look at TV and they look at everything else. They feel disrespected. If we put them in the role of the expert, you know, how questions.
Yes.
How did that go for you? Or, well, when that happened, how did you feel? At least they feel like they're getting some respect from us, and they do tell us more.
Showing respect, and also I think is really important for the teen, and showing trust and making observations rather than judgments. Also, don't rush to judge. I've got a call coming in from Concord. This is Kelly in Concord. And Kelly has got an 18-year-old, and she's got some questions about party drinking and what how to react. Kelly, are you on the air?
Yeah.
Hi, Kelly. Can you tell us your situation more in detail?
Well, I actually had I called on two premises. One was the fact that I had just dealt with the situation with my 18-year-old, which I know I'm lucky that I'm just now dealing with this at 18. I totally understand that, and she's a good girl. She's very trustworthy. She tells me we have open communication. But when she told me that she was going to go to a party and that she was going to drink, it kind of threw me off because I didn't really expect that from her.
Mm-hmm.
So my first reaction was safety first. What I said to her was, well, just do me a favor. I know you're 18, and if you're going to drink, you're going to this party where they're drinking. Just let me know so that I can pick you up if you get drunk.
Yeah.
Because I would feel safer knowing that you're in my car than in your friend's car who just started to drive.
That was a great thing to say. Yeah.
Is, okay, did I not take it far enough? Should I have been more of a parent? Should I have been like, okay, look, you should not be drinking. Your father was an alcoholic. My dad was an alcoholic. Should I go back over that with her and be like, look, okay, this is not okay to me.
You know what? Michael is chomping at the bit to respond to you. So he's got something to say. Hang on there. We're going to listen to what Michael's got.
Sorry, I almost jumped out of my seat.
Yeah, he really did.
Because what you did was really great, Kelly. And you know what? The important point is you can go back. We don't want to just have one conversation mm-hmm. about drugs and alcohol with our kids. We want to have lots of little conversations. So it's absolutely fine to go back and say, you know, I was thinking about what happened the other night. And I just wanted to tell you, you know I can't control you. I can't make you do something. But my preference is that you don't drink. We have people in our family who have really struggled with alcohol use and abuse. I love you. It's really important to me that you manage this well. I want you to be able to talk to me about it and ask questions. But that doesn't mean I think it's okay. So my preference is that you don't drink. I don't think it's that good for you. It doesn't really lead anywhere, but I realize you might, and I want the door to be open. So I think you did great, and you can go back and talk to her.
Keep the dialogue open, Kelly, and you know you're on the right track. Basically, that's what we want to tell you. We're going to send you also that same book. I'm Staying Connected to Your Teen. Thank you so much for calling.
You're listening to Childhood Matters.
Important info for parents and child caregivers.
Brought to you in part by First 5 Marin.
Hi, we're back. It's Beth Samuelson here hosting Your Teen Matters in for Rona Renner today, off picking oranges in Florida somewhere. And I've got with me the wonderful Michael Simon, who's here to talk with us about communicating with your teen. Do's and don'ts, and we're getting some really interesting stories from parents here. Please give us a call here. We'd love to hear from you. That's 1-877-372-5437. You can also send us an email at info@childhoodmatters.org, but we'd love to hear your voice. And on the line, I've got Linda from Brentwood, who's got some advice for us. Boy, we could certainly use that. Linda, what have you got to share with us?
Good morning.
Hi.
I wanted to make a comment, actually, on the earlier call with the young lady with the 15 and the 16-year-old.
Yes.
And then also for the one who just got off the phone.
Great.
My daughter is 21, but when she was 15, 16, I went through the exact same thing. She was not being honest about something. She would come to me, and we've always had a very open communication, but there are some times when they don't want to tell you. And if you react the wrong way, she get extremely defensive.
Yes.
So what I learned how to do is give her advice and comment as if I'm giving her the advice for the friend. And I would also give her the very strong repercussions if it's something that a safety issue. I would tell her all of that, but I caught her attention and she was listening. So not only could she, you know, give that advice to a friend, but she can apply it to herself. And she didn't get defensive because I wasn't directing it directly to her.
That's a really interesting way of handling that, which is to just depersonalize it, I think, in a certain way, and make it as just a sage piece of information. Here's what I'm thinking you should tell somebody in that in that setting. Michael, what do you think? I think that's interesting.
Yeah, that's a really lovely response, and because I would think it would help her be less defensive. And it also is giving her the message that friends are important. And, you know, this is what I would tell a dear friend. So great answer.
Yeah, that's really great. I really appreciate your call. And I think that just being able to depersonalize things for kids and make it less hot and more of a factual conversation. Here are my concerns. This is what I'm thinking. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this also. So it's a discussion rather than a lecture. That's another thing that parents tend to do, is get on the podium and lecture. And I think Linda's got a really good approach. Linda, thank you so much for calling.
Oh, you're welcome. I wanted to actually make a comment on the young lady with the daughter that went to the party.
Yes, go ahead.
And how I handled that with my daughter, she don't drink, but she has friends that drink and they go to parties. But I would always show her, you know, it's on the news all the time. Instead of me drilling so much on drinking and driving, because some of them do it anyway.
Yep.
But the flip side to that is, 9 times out of 10, it's innocent bystanders that get killed. And you see it on the news all the time. People is on trial for murder, manslaughter, the whole 9 yards. And I would always tell her, I can't do time for you.
Yeah.
This is what happens when you drink and drive. Innocent people get killed. So if you may be a passenger, they may ask you to drive. Whatever the case is, this is the repercussions that they're going to have to deal with. So you may not want to drink and drive or even ride with people that's drinking and driving. So she don't. And I haven't had that problem, and I'm just thankful for that. But, you know, it's just all on how you address it.
Yeah, I think I think in wrapping this, I think that's absolutely great. Again, you know, here are the facts. Let's take the judgment away from this and just talk about what's real here, which is that if this happens, here are possible consequences. Thank you so much for calling. I actually want to hear now some kids' voices. And here we've gone to a middle school locally here, and we've talked to some boys and girls.
I'm assistant producer Felsha Zuschlag, and this week I spoke with local teens to hear their perspective on communication with their parents.
Do you have any issues communicating with your parents, and what are they?
Yes, she doesn't seem to take what I say in mind, and she doesn't seem to want to hear it.
Oh, no. I don't like talking to my parents.
Well, with my mom, because she criticized what I got to say a lot. My dad, it's just, I mean, I'm cool.
No, I mean, I don't have the hard time at all.
Sometimes, yeah.
Not really.
What are the easiest things to talk about with your parents?
Money.
Food. And what happened at her job.
My friends and boys.
What's happening at school, like with other kids?
The easiest thing is school, like education, not like school drama, just like how your grades are and stuff.
Mostly like TV stuff, because we mostly like the same shows and games and other stuff like that.
And what are the hardest things to talk about with your parents?
Sex.
Boys, clothes, school.
Sex and drugs and things about myself.
My personal life.
Like about drugs. I don't take drugs, but like I wouldn't want to talk to them about it.
Probably your personal life, like you having a boyfriend or something.
Mostly about kind of like school stuff and stuff about me personally.
And do you have any advice for adults who do have trouble communicating with their teenagers?
Try to act like a teen.
Just to kind of give them space and like let them come to you. Don't really like force it out of them and stuff.
Don't be nosy all the time.
Don't try to get into their business too much, because if you do, then they're going to probably like just like push away or something.
Just try to talk to them, like let's not try to like get it out of them. Just sit down and just start being like fun with them, and then they'll probably just say it, and then probably not knowing that they're saying it.
I think they should try to be a little bit more open-minded and stuff. Like if the kids tell them something that they didn't like to hear, not yell at them, but like ask what happened, and then like try to help them through that or something.
Communicate anyway, because they already know about everything.
For Childhood Matters, I'm Felsha Zuschlag.
Great. Well, I heard so much there. Michael, I'm going to throw this back to you and love your... What stood out for you? What did you hear from that?
Oh, I was just too busy smiling.
I know, me too.
It's wonderful. Well, one of the first things I heard was that a lot of the same things they said were the easiest were the things that they also said were the hardest mm-hmm. to talk about. But many of them said that talking about themselves personally was really one of the hardest things. And that raises the question of how can we make it safe for them to talk to us?
Yeah, I think kids are afraid of judgment. I heard one in there about criticism, you know, just not, I don't criticize. Kids are worried that you're going to have assumptions about things. And I think they also, I heard that really need my space. Let us come to you. Let us talk to you. That it's hard to be painted into a corner and asked a lot of questions.
Yes, and how good it feels for them to have us take them seriously.
Yes.
To really listen. And they're going to say things that are patently ridiculous, like, what time would you like your curfew to be? 4 a.m.
Yeah.
And, you know, try not to laugh, actually, because for them, that's meaningful.
We're going to come right back and talk more about what we heard. And we'd love to take your calls when we come back. Please give us a buzz here at 877-372-5437 at Your Teen Matters. Good morning. You're listening to Your Teen Matters this morning, a special six-part series. This is the sixth of the series, focusing today on communication with your teen. Do's and don'ts, what to say, what not to say. And in my studio with me is Michael Simon, psychotherapist here in the East Bay, and a specialist in dealing with teenagers. And we just heard some voices of teens and what they felt was difficult about communicating with their parents. Was there anything else that stood out for you, Michael, in that that segment that we just heard?
Well, I love that they were actually able to tell parents very directly what it was that was hard for them. If you give them the opportunity to tell you what's difficult, they actually will tell you what's hard for them.
Yes. I think making yourself available for important conversations and showing that you're open and being careful not to jump to conclusions with kids, but really listen. I think parents sometimes don't listen. Parents like to hear the sound of their own voice a lot. We do. I mean, I like to hear the sound of my voice. That's why I'm on the radio, actually. So that works out well. But it's true that, I mean, I think in general, I mean, I remember as a teenager, my dad getting on the podium just lecturing, you know, and you find yourself having no place to speak as a kid and no place to share. And parents yell, too, and they get mad and they get into that place where if your teen makes you into a teenager, where you get into a back and forth. And I think that's another concern that you don't want to be engaging on that level. But
yes, or the other thing that we can do, because we're overworked and tired and busy, is we can trivialize what they bring us. So we can
yes.
say things like, oh, you know, I went through that when I was in middle school, or, you know, it's not that bad, you'll get over it.
And
if we remember anything at all about being adolescents, we remember that every little thing that happened was huge for us. And it's really great for kids to feel like we're taking that seriously, even though we're, you know, we're grown and we have figured out how to deal with it. They haven't yet.
Yes. I think that's a huge point, is to not marginalize the kids and make it seem like what they have to say is not a big deal. You know, it all is a big deal.
You bet.
And along those lines, we got an email from a mom who wondered how to communicate with her teen about feeling down and worried that is this depression or is this just a teen blues kind of typical mood swing? And how can a parent communicate with their teen if they're concerned that they're unhappy to get to the root of it and to find out if it's serious? What do you think, Michael? What can we say to parents about that?
Well, let me first say that the rates of depression for teens are really increasing quite significantly in the last 5 to 10 years. So if your teen comes to you and says, I think I'm depressed, or I think I'm really down, pay attention to them. They're telling you something important. But if you line up the characteristics of adolescence alongside the criteria for a diagnosis of depression, they look just about the same. Mm-hmm. So how can you make the difference? the first thing to consider is that a normal teen will come home. I'm going to put in quotes normal. Normal teen will come home from school, look for some food, bounce into their room, close the door, perhaps not see you again until dinner, might give you a surly look or a surly vocalization, and then they're gone. They come back for dinner and they're perfectly happy. Then they disappear again. They don't want to talk to you. Don't talk to you until the next morning. Show up in the morning happy and bright. Now, this is normal. Teens go through about 60 major mood changes every day. So
wow.
It's okay for them to be up and down. When they seem stuck in a particular mood, if their mood persists, or if their mood seems different, if you just feel like, boy, they're just not themselves. Normally, they're really quiet, and now they're talking all the time. Or normally, they're talking all the time, and now they're really quiet. That's actually a sign that there might be something happening around mood.
So behavior changes, significant behavior changes, really. And I was going to say, it might be hard, too, for moms with boys, especially, because often boys are less verbal about not being happy. That communication piece can be really stunted sometimes, because moms, we all tend to be pretty verbal, and we like to talk at our kids, and the boys are often not as elaborative, especially teenage boys. They tend to be somewhat monosyllabic, as we know. And doesn't necessarily mean they're depressed, but...
Yes, and that's why it's important to look for a behavior change in your child.
Yes.
Or a change in their eating or their sleeping pattern.
Yeah, and you know, along those lines, we've got a guy on the phone. We have a dad. We've got Philip in Foster City who's with us. Hi, Philip.
Hi. I just wanted to... I have a 28 and 27-year-old daughters, and real proud of who they've become, but I just know that as a juvenile, I wasn't the most perfect kid, but I think what I want to do is learn from my mistakes and make sure that my kids were, you know, better than I was. And one of the benefits of having been through that, and I don't really believe you had to have been through it. I think you could have observed it at the same time, but I think it's really important for parents to remember what it was like at that age and then get to know the kids' friends. I always knew who my kids' friends were. I coached soccer, and I think the best times where I learned the most was driving them home from soccer practice or from dance or something like that. And it really puts you at an advantage because then you can anticipate the problems that might be coming up later. And I found that to be very successful for me and my wife.
I like what you said about just being sort of a fly on the wall in the car, driving the kids home and listening, and the casual conversations can be the most productive, you know, just weighing in a little bit when you're listening to the kids talk to each other, and you learn so much. And also what you said about remembering what it was like to be a teen. Some of us get to a point where it is hard to, I mean, I work with teenagers, so I'm with them a lot. I hear it, I see it, but many people don't. And some of the first teens that they deal with are their own. So it's difficult to remember back to what it was like, to feeling confused and overwhelmed by daily interactions with other kids and all the issues that life presents and how hard it can be to talk to an adult. And obviously, it's sometimes easier to talk to another adult other than your parent, too. I think that's important to note. You know, as a trusted older person, can often be the sounding board that the parent can't, because parent communication can be so loaded. It's hard. I don't know if, Michael, if you have that feeling as well, but it's...
Yes, absolutely. And Philip, it's a great thing. I heard what you said about that you wanted things to be better for your kids than you had it. And I think that's sort of the mark of a good parent. And it's often why parenting is so difficult, is we're trying so hard to have things be better for them. Of course, the challenge is in trying to make it better. We don't want to keep them from having their own failures and learning from them. Just like you're saying, you want to be able to mess up and sometimes not be a great parent and learn from it. We need to give our kids the chance to do that, too.
And it's hard sometimes, even though we see it coming, we see the problems down the road. We see that if you do this, this is what's going to happen. You can't stop everything. But Philip, I really appreciate your calling, and it's really good piece of wisdom for everyone to draw on your own experience. Remember what it was like to be a teenager. Thanks, Philip, for calling.
You're welcome.
So, yeah, I mean, I think it's a complicated web to navigate, is the communication piece with the kids, because the need for privacy at this age is so strong, and the need to build a world separate from the parents that's their own. I mean, I'm just thinking, we had a whole show on technology, and one of the issues that came up was texting and how much the kids use that as a way of communicating separate and keeping a private world separate from their parents, and parents' concerns about not knowing what's going on and not being able to jump in when there were problems. What do you what advice do you have for parents in terms of staying, respecting kids' privacy, but being able to stay aware of what's going on with them?
It's really a tough challenge. There's a lot of good work that's being done right now by a woman called Dina Boyd, who used to be out here at Cal, and she's doing work on how social networking is really an important way that teens make friends, maintain friendships, and it really is the new mall. So they want to be able to be plugged in and wired. And at the same time, I have concerns about our kids' ethical development. So if they're spending so much time not being face-to-face with their friends, what does that do to their sense of knowing how they're affecting another person and how another person is affecting them? So it's a really difficult question. But one thing is, we have to know something about what they're doing, and that means asking them without grilling them.
Asking without grilling, I think, is huge. And just being able to have open discussion with kids. Important to remember, we're coming to the final minutes here of our show. Michael, how do people get in touch with you if they'd like more information or help in supporting their kids and communicating with their kids?
Well, you can get in touch with me through the website. It's probably the best, and that's a long name, www.practicalhelpforparents.com. You can send emails there, and while I can't answer every email, I'll certainly try to.
And for Childhood Matters and Your Teen Matters, I'm Beth Samuelson. I can be reached at beth@sosforstudents.com. SOSforstudents.com is the website. Thanks to Michael Simon today and all of our listeners. Thank you.